I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Kansas City activists have sought to raise the minimum wage here for years, but state law prohibits cities from setting their own wage standards. This November, though, Missourians will get the chance to raise the state's minimum wage to $12 an hour by 2023. Today, we discuss the possible pros and cons of a statewide wage increase. Then, young adults and teens are more involved in national politics than ever, it seems. But will usually reluctant young voters make their voices heard in the midterm? We'll go straight to the source and hear perspectives from a politically active high schooler from Kansas's most liberal city. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Suddenly, giants in the business world are moving toward a $15 an hour minimum wage. Amazon made headlines last week with its announcement that it was boosting wages. It followed Target and Disney theme parks. All this comes as Missouri voters will be considering an increase in the minimum wage here when they go to the polls next month. The Missouri proposal calls for a gradual increase in the minimum wage until it reaches $12 an hour in 2023. It's Proposition B on the ballot. Now, an in-person conversation that will lay out the pros and cons of this proposal. With us, Patrick Ishmael is Director of the Government Accountability with the Conservative Show Me Institute. Patrick, nice to have you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Richard Von Glahn is the Policy Director with the Pro-Increase Missouri Jobs with Justice Group. Richard, nice to have you.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, Richard, you favor this idea, and I'm wondering why.
Sure. So over the last 10 years, costs for necessities in Missouri, whether they be rent, food, gas, medicine, have been steadily going up, but wages haven't been keeping pace. Minimum wage for a full-time worker now is just $314 a week, just over $16,000 a year. That is not enough to survive anywhere in this state, and we believe that full-time workers deserve better than poverty. When we talk about these workers, we should think about who they are. A lot of them are teachers' aides who are helping raise the next generation of Missouri children. They're home health care workers who care for people with disabilities in their homes. They're nursing home workers who care for our aging parents. Nearly 100,000 of them are at or near retirement age, and over 260,000 children live in homes that will be impacted by Proposition B. So when you talked about it, you're right. It's a gradual increase, 85 cents a year until it reaches $12 by 2023. Estimates are that that'll impact one in four Missouri workers. And when you put more money in the pockets of low-income workers, you know what they do with it?
They spend it.
They spend it.
Yeah.
And that's why you've seen over 400 Missouri businesses come out in support of Proposition B as well, because they know in a consumer-driven economy, you need to have consumers that have the ability to go out and spend money and buy the necessities that they need in life.
Patrick Ishmael, again with the Show Me Institute, you oppose this idea. Why?
Well, I think the first question we have to answer is, what are we trying to accomplish? And if you're trying to target assistance to the poor, there are a lot better ways of doing it, because when you look at the minimum wage increase that's proposed, and we have a study that came out last week that looks at the numbers, only about one in five folks who would benefit from this minimum wage increase are those actually living in poverty. And so there are a lot of folks, part-timers, folks who have second jobs, who are going to benefit from this. But if you're trying to help the poor, you're much better off with an earned income tax credit where it's actually targeted to their needs. And I think the other part, too, is that there are the unintended consequences as well, because when you raise the minimum wage, you incentivize employers to do a few different things: reduce hours, reduce jobs, go into automation, raise prices, or some combination of those four things. So we have to know what we're intending to do first, and then we have to look and see whether or not this policy prescription does it. And unfortunately, minimum wage increase, if you're trying to help the poor, isn't your best option. We've always supported the earned income tax credit.
Isn't there just a fairness proposition on the line here, Patrick, this idea that if you work full time, as Richard was saying, and you earn the minimum wage in doing so, that you can't live on that. You literally, you're in poverty and you work full time. That's not exactly rewarding hard work.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good point. And there are folks who work full time and make a minimum wage. I think that is true. And it is true. But when you look at the complete universe of people who make a minimum wage, about two-thirds of them live in households that are at or above 150% of the poverty line, which means that you're talking about teenagers in a lot of cases where mm-hmm. they are actually supplementing their family's income or supplementing their own income, and they live in a household where they're not actually in poverty. That constitutes the majority of folks who make a minimum wage currently.
See, I have different numbers. I have less than half of the 2.6 million hourly workers. This is from Pew. Who were at or below the federal minimum wage in 2015 were ages 16 to 24.
Yeah, it certainly can, depending on which range you're looking at, it could be 16 to 30. So I guess I would have to look at the numbers that you're looking at. But if you're talking about folks that are actually in poverty, two-thirds of minimum wage earners are not from households that are in poverty, and more specifically, not even in 150% of the poverty range.
Right. You know, Richard, one thing you do here, and Patrick just raised this idea, you raise the minimum wage, you're going to cost businesses, it causes them to cut jobs, cut workers. What about that?
So there's actually a lot of great data, because over the last 10 years, different states have been working to increase the minimum wage. We've actually seen over half the states in this country have increased the minimum wage. And the data across that is very clear. When you raise wages, wages go up, but also unemployment goes down. And that is because you see, as money goes back into the economy and those consumers are able to go out and spend more money, have more purchasing power, support local businesses, you see that benefit. And that is why you see so many Missouri businesses coming out and supporting Proposition B.
So you're saying just the opposite is true. There is no decline in the number of jobs. They actually rise, you're saying.
I mean, that is the most recent data that has looked across the country. And we have plenty of recent evidence on this, because over half the states in this country have taken this action and have raised the minimum wage, because they know that their members of the community need to have a wage that you work full time, you don't live in poverty.
Patrick, what about that?
So I think you would have to be very careful about the cause and effect there, because we are obviously in a growing economy currently. And, you know, even in Missouri, the minimum wage increases automatically. And so it isn't a surprise that other states, including Missouri, that the minimum wage itself is increasing. And simultaneous to that, as other factors are, whether you're talking about tax policy or other mm-hmm. things, the economy is also doing well. I don't think that you can ascribe that job growth to an increase in the minimum wage, because the evidence, you know, if you look at the literature on this, runs against that. In fact, if you talk to Christine Romer, who was the head of Barack Obama's Council of Economic Advisors, mm-hmm. She was very clear in the New York Times in 2013 that the minimum wage is not a boon to economic growth. And in fact, in that particular article, she recommended that if we are trying to help the poor and if we are trying to make sure that they get assistance, the earned income tax credit is a better option. So, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of different, you know, ways to approach the question of whether or not minimum wage is successful. I'm always open to looking at new research. But I think that the idea that raising the minimum wage lowers unemployment runs against pretty basic economic principles.
You know, I'm just wondering, Patrick, too, about the business world just sort of writ large here, moving toward a $15 an hour model. I said in the opening, you know, Amazon made all these headlines last week. It's moving towards a $15 an hour wage. Target's done it. Disney theme parks have done it. Lots of other big businesses have done it. I mean, that seems to be the trend right now.
Yeah, and I think there are a lot of reasons for that. For one, if you are raising your wage and others are not, you're probably going to get better labor. And because if they can earn more, they're going to choose those places where they can make more money. I think that that is an important thing to understand about wages. But I think the other part, too, that you have to keep in mind is that when you look at who is raising those wages, one, it's good, but two, if they're trying to compel others to raise those wages as well, maybe they also want the cost of doing business for the competitors to be a little bit higher. Mm-hmm. A lot of the places where you see minimum wages most prevalent are small businesses, a lot of family businesses. And if all of a sudden you have to compete with Walmart's wages or Target's wages or whatever it is, and you're compelled to, by law, to pay $15 an hour or whatever that wage might be, it makes you less competitive. And so, yeah, it's no surprise that a lot of big businesses want to do this. It makes a lot of other competitors less competitive.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking today about a proposal on the November ballot in Missouri that would raise the minimum wage gradually to $12 an hour by 2023. It's Proposition B on the ballot. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888 is our number, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Richard, we were talking about fairness a few minutes ago. What about this argument on the flip side of the coin, this notion that so many of these workers, we can argue about the percentage, are high school kids, college people who are just entering the job market. And the argument would be they don't deserve to earn more. They're just learning, you know, the ways of the work world. What about that?
So we should talk first about who these workers are. As I mentioned at the beginning, you see a lot of these workers, these are teachers' aides that are helping educate and train the next generation of Missourians. These are home health care workers. They're skilled nursing home workers who are caring for our neighbors with disabilities, who are caring for aging parents. And the notion that it's only teenagers, you know, just isn't true. There's nearly 100,000 people who are at or near retirement age who would be impacted by this proposal. There are
160,000 in Missouri.
Mm-hmm. There are 260,000 Missouri children who are in homes of a parent who will be impacted by this proposal. So when we think about who are the people, that's who we're talking about. We're talking about hardworking people who are trying to make ends meet. But as I think we've all stated, the current minimum wage of just $7.85 an hour, $314 a week for a full-time worker just doesn't reward the work that they're putting into it.
Again, you're asking government to step in and set wages here, Richard. Why not let the market do it?
Well, you know, what we have seen is right now the market has been failing too many Missourians, and we've got all of these families left out struggling to make ends meet. But if you look at the data of what's been happening,
why is the market failing them if we're at full employment here? Why isn't that taking care of the problem?
You know, why wages aren't going up is a great question. There's a lot of theory that would suggest, oh, wages should just automatically go up here. But what you turn and you see what business leaders have been saying, and both nationally and here in Missouri, they've been speaking up and saying, you know, we actually need to see some growth in wages, because that will support us as business owners, knowing that the consumers out there are going to have more disposable income to be able to come out and purchase our goods.
Patrick, the notion that the market should be setting this rate, I gather you're all for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what you're seeing with the minimum wage right now is that it isn't a really high percentage of people who actually make minimum wage. Sometimes it's a little bit more than that. But I think the market wage, so what it actually bears, is generally speaking above what the minimum wage is. And if you look historically in inflation-adjusted dollars, the current minimum wage is about what it has been historically. So, you know, I think what we need to make sure, though, is that there will be lots of people who are impacted by a higher minimum wage. I think the figure that we have is something like 300,000 people would see a higher wage. And part of the reason for that is that you're not just impacting minimum wage people. You're also impacting people along the way at $9 an hour and $10 an hour and $11 an hour and then up to $12 an hour. If we are trying to help the poor, though, and I think that I think we can all agree that that is a worthwhile objective, we have to look at what actually works, and we have to make sure that we're targeting that assistance to the folks who need it the most. You know, our budgets are our priorities. Our policies are our priorities. It's a hierarchy. And if we are not prioritizing the poor, if we are just raising the minimum wage without regard to what the end result is going to be, then it's kind of a futile exercise. I think we want to make sure that people are taken care of and resolved. There has to be that backstop, and there has to be an ability for people to be able to take care of themselves. But I don't think that the minimum wage is well tailored to that purpose.
816-235-2888. We're talking about the need, the call to raise Missouri's minimum wage to $12 an hour gradually over the next few years until 2023. Again, it's Proposition B on your ballot in November. Let's go to some phone calls here. And Al from Kansas City, Missouri. Al, good morning.
Good morning. Another important show. The issue is, you know, something's better than nothing is not an answer to the problem. The cost of living has gone up. The cost of rent, the average rent in Kansas City now is roughly $1,200 plus a month, believe it or not. The rents of $400, $500, $600, $700 no longer exist for minimum wage people. So it's a situation where it's multi-pronged. It isn't $12 an hour isn't going to solve anything, and it's kind of a nod to the poor. It's not in any way making an adjustment to the economic model. It looks like our national economic model is bottom line management, predatory capitalism, and that will never raise anybody up from poverty. $12 an hour just is a joke and an embarrassment and an offense.
Even $12 an hour, Al, you're saying is an embarrassment.
Yeah. Yes. It's not a wage issue. It's a cost of living issue and, of course, a wage issue as well. So, you know, you've got people entrenched, you know, business owners, corporations, digging their heels in and saying we're going to give as little as we possibly can.
Right.
And that's not going to solve the problem. And that's my comment. And I love you guys.
Yeah,
thank you.
Al, thank you. And there is this notion of the minimum wage, and then there's something called the living wage, which Richard has referred to here. That's a number that seeks to determine how much one has to earn to provide for him or herself. In Kansas City, Patrick, it's supposed to be about $11.05 an hour to get by on this living wage and afford all the basic necessities you need. That comes from a calculation from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Is that a valid way to look at this minimum wage question?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you talk about living wages, you have to know what the assumptions are that go into
it. Of course.
And also, you know, the caller talked about the only rents that are available in Kansas City are $1,200 a month, and I am aware of rents that are much better than that. So it really depends on the assumptions that go into it. The other part, too, a more general statement, is that free market capitalism has been the greatest reducer of poverty in human history. It has brought billions out of destitution worldwide. And so, absolutely, we can always do better in the United States. But I think that to try to centralize authority and try to direct markets and make that your first approach to solving policy problems is not your best option. We have tools that work, and one of the best tools are the markets.
Okay. Any thoughts on that, Richard, as you hear Patrick talking about it?
Well, you know, as I listen to the caller, what I hear from the caller is the frustration for many hardworking people in this state who are working full time and could be taking home as little as $314 a week. He's absolutely right. Prices on everything is going up, and we can't continue to let a system like that dictate things to our families. You know, full-time work, we need to reward work. Full-time work deserves better than poverty results.
Richard, explain exactly what a yes vote on this proposition does. How is Prop B going to work here if it passes?
Sure. Proposition B is a gradual increase in the minimum wage. It does it 85 cents a year. At the beginning of every year till it gets up to $12 by 2023. It maintains the state's current law that after that it would be tied to the rate of inflation. So it would go up at the rate of inflation after that.
Or down potentially, I guess, if that would ever happen. Yeah. And what are you seeing in terms of what's the Kansas City area business community? What's been the response from that group? Are you seeing, is it mixed? Is it one side or the other generally? What are you seeing?
You know, polling from the Chamber of Commerce has indicated that as many as 80% of chamber members support increasing the minimum wage. Hmm. The response that we've had from business leaders, not just in Kansas City, but from across the state, has been to support this gradual and reasonable increase because they know the benefit that it will have by putting more money in consumers' pockets. Voters as well, you know, sick of a reality in which full-time work isn't being rewarded in the way that it should, have been very supportive as well.
Patrick, you just heard Richard say that up to 80% of the members of the Chamber of Commerce here locally are in favor of this increase and this idea. Is that, does that match your, what you understand out there?
You know, I haven't checked around. But to be clear, you know, my position, I think our position, isn't pro-business. It's pro-market. And I think that there is a vast difference between what a business might want to impose through government and what's actually good for the economy itself and what might benefit consumers and workers alike. So, you know, the Chamber of Commerce has its members and they have their opinions. But I think at the end of the day, I want to make sure that folks are empowered to be able to have greater control over their incomes and that not only is work rewarded, but that we are able to help the poor and target that assistance appropriately.
Okay, we're going to leave our conversation there. Again, Prop B will be on the ballot this November for folks on the Missouri side of the state line, a big issue facing the state. It'll be settled come November here. I want to thank my guest, Patrick Ishmael, Director of Government Accountability with the Show Me Institute. Patrick, always good to have you.
Thank you.
Richard Von Glahn is the policy director with the Pro Increase Missouri Jobs with Justice. Richard, thanks very much. Appreciate
it. Thank you, Steve.
Time for a break. When we come back, we'll talk about younger folks and are they going to turn out to vote on issues like Prop B this November? I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. Tomorrow on the show, he's won a MacArthur Genius Grant, was the artist in residence at the Met in New York, and he's been nominated for a Grammy. Next up, a stop in Kansas City for Open Spaces. It's a conversation with renowned jazz musician Vijay Iyer. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, you only have to Google Young Voters Midterm 2018 to read a vast array of perspectives on how young voters will turn out in November's elections. Some lament the perennial lack of interest in the under 30 crowd, especially for midterms. Others see a change coming in which up to 68% of young voters might actually cast ballots. Everybody agrees, however, that this voting block is vast, and if it shows up at the polls, it could sway numerous elections in Kansas, Missouri, and across the United States. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is among those who believe that this year's election is a tipping point for young voters who can no longer say they have no stake or no say in this year's elections. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is a Lawrence psychologist and author who works with teens and families. Wes, good to have you back. Welcome.
Nice to be here, Steve.
He's joined by Sammy Turner of Lawrence High School, who recently joined the League of Women Voters to register hundreds of high school seniors in the Lawrence area. She's a junior and serves as a student body treasurer and president of the high school's Young Democrats Club. Sammy, nice to have you too. Welcome. Wes, before we talk about the actual voting, can you share what you see in the political landscape right now for young people, and what are they talking about right now?
Yeah, it's a rocky few weeks, and of course, in a word, Kavanaugh.
Kavanaugh.
This
yeah.
is a very big deal for young people. They're watching it and having a kind of a hard time with it because it's traumatizing for a lot of people who've had similar experiences. And I don't just mean teenagers, but 20-somethings, 30-somethings, 50-somethings that are looking at this and it's triggering for them. And I don't think we should understate the seriousness of that.
You know, Sammy, we're hearing all this talk about how the Kavanaugh nomination and the hearings have fired up the conservative right. Are you seeing some fired upness among folks on the left as well?
No, yes, definitely. I think a lot of, especially young women, this nomination is very concerning, and the vote to me is a continued suppression of victims, and I don't believe that's okay, and I think a lot of people from the left see that as well.
And is that sort of describe a lot of your high school classmates over in Lawrence?
Oh, yes, definitely. A lot of young people did not agree about this at all, and we're trying to speak out against it.
And some of them, not all of them, can vote, right?
I mean, yes.
Many of them are on the brink or on the cusp of, but many of them actually can vote.
Yes, definitely. And many who are going to vote in the presidential elections are prepared to.
Yeah. You know, I'm wondering, Wes, if these issues, the whole Kavanaugh hearings and the trauma you just mentioned associated with it, do these issues come up in therapy sessions that you do every day?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just that issue. It's been for the last several years. What's happened, if you look over the years since 2011, we started doing shows like this, and it's an interesting because you see the progression of thinking amongst teenagers and always trying to sort of stay ahead of that, whether it's about sexual attraction or transgender expression or politics in general. And kids came to restlessly believe that we were on a progression in a direction they wanted to go on all of those kind of reproductive rights, you just name it. And now this is challenged. This is really a question about what their futures are going to be like along the lines of all those issues. And I remember we used to talk a couple of years ago about microaggressions, and I don't hear as much talk about that now because they're macroaggressions, things that people are holding in their hearts are being said in the media. And this is scary to kids, and on a daily basis, we're seeing this in the teen and young adult population. What is our future going
to
be?
You know, Wes, it's scary to kids, but does that correlate to this idea of actually registering to vote and then getting out on election day or at some point before then and actually casting a ballot?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a cause and effect here, some say.
It's going to be interesting. You recall once upon a time you said in a show, you know, kids need to read the papers. They need to be interested in it and not apathetic. And it's true. And they aren't. They are not apathetic at this point. They see this as a critical part of their lives. Now, it seems like the easiest thing to do would be walk down to the poll and, you know, mark the little ballot. I think that takes some enactment, some energy for them. I think they have it this year. This is why some of the most optimistic polls are suggesting there could be a 60-70% turnout for a midterm when there's normally only about 20-25% in this age group.
And Sammy, it sounds like you're suggesting that we're going to see exactly that kind of turnout among young people based on what you're seeing over in Lawrence.
No, definitely. I would say I've definitely seen an increase in involvement even within our LHS Young Democrats Club. I have friends beforehand who would never come to volunteer with me for things, who are now tagging along at phone banks and canvases or asking me about more opportunities. And I've seen a lot of people who never before read the news are now listening to podcasts or watching videos.
And again, what these younger folks are experiencing, Sammy, is what? Just this notion that this is not the country they want to grow up in? Is it that simple?
Yeah, this is the state and the country that we are going to be inherit, and I don't believe anyone should be happy with the status quo, and we want to be able to have a prosperous future and be able to provide that for the future generations.
You know, any number of times over the years, Sammy, you should know that we've done shows like this, either with Wes or with others, where there's this talk about young people are feeling energized, and then Election Day comes and goes, and the stats roll out, and the story turns out to be something different, that young folks really didn't show up in great numbers. So, you know, for a grizzled vet like me, I have a little cynicism about this that you should be aware of, I guess. But you're telling me you're convinced it's going to be you're going to show Steve something different this time.
Yeah. Well, also, there's been an advancement in technology, especially with the development of KS Votes. Especially, you can get an advanced ballot. Just go to www.ksvotes.org, and you can literally vote from your couch. And I think it's fantastic that it's so easy now to register voters and to have information at your fingertips. And there's so many different ways where we can just remind people to get out and vote.
You know, I'm wondering, Wes, as you deal with younger folks in therapy and you talk with them every day, what emotions are coming through as you have these conversations? What are you hearing?
It's kind of mixed. You on one hand, you get this just sense of defeatism. And on the other hand, you get this...
And folks who feel that way typically don't vote.
Well, yeah. And there's where the other hand comes in. You get this sense of empowerment. And I don't know which one's going to win out. I will give you my example of where I think it's headed. As a young person, I would have thought is about as apolitical as anybody, was in my office a while back. And she was expressing her helplessness. And I said, well, maybe you should register to vote. And she looked at me with piercing anger in her eyes, and she said, I am insulted that you would think I am not registered to vote.
Oh, wow.
And then she lectured me about her voting plan. It wasn't as detailed as I think Sammy's is. Sammy knows every candidate and everything about every candidate. But that's a political aficionado. A lot of young people aren't quite at that level, but they know who's for what that's meaningful to them. And I think that's where a lot of kids are.
I wonder if our listeners want to chime in here, either younger folks themselves or parents of young people, and maybe they're noticing a greater activism this time, or maybe it's the same old story and they're not that fired up. I'd like to hear from everybody on this one. 816-235-2888 is our number, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. Well, Sammy, tell me your story. Why are you as energized as you are this time around? What is it that has you so fired up?
Well, so I actually got interested in politics back in eighth grade. My gifted facilitator, Ashley Bisamanis, really inspired me. Second semester.
Eighth grade?
Yeah.
I didn't know what a voting booth was in eighth grade.
Hey, those middle schoolers have become the most interesting people, I got to tell you.
Yeah. Well, she challenged our class to create an activism project that we create ourselves. And so knowing that many different families in Lawrence struggle with money management issues and there's not a lot of economic tools taught in schools, we decided to create an event where anyone could come and get free financial advice. And so after months of planning, we put up this event and around 40 to 60 people received services. And so after that experience, I felt a sense of accomplishment and empowerment.
Yeah.
And that led me to want to do more for my community. And now I get to do what I love every day after school and sometimes even during.
And tell us what you've been doing exactly.
So most days I phone bank a lot. I go on Canvas. Sometimes I do research for, I do donor research for a campaign, and I try
to... This is for the Democrats.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I also register voters. I try to get a lot of people in our club interested and try to get more volunteers for.
How hard has it been for you to get volunteers for the various things you want to plug them into?
Beforehand, it was hard, but now it's been surprisingly easy. Last night, I was at a phone bank for Paul Davis, and I got two of my friends to come along with me, and now they're energized and they want to do more even tonight, and we're going to go canvass Thursday too. So,
and what is it? What did you hear about Kavanaugh and the nomination process amongst your classmates and your friends? What kinds of conversations were you having about that whole thing as it played out?
People were devastated that he was even up for nomination, that people were discounting the accusations, because I know many people at my school who have been sexually assaulted, and it's discouraging.
But you're in high school, and you're telling me you know a lot of people who've been sexually assaulted?
Remember, yes. When Kavanaugh is alleged to have sexually assaulted someone was when he was in high school. And those of us who listen to those stories every day heard that one ring true.
You know, I don't want to get too far off track here, but of your friends, of every 10 of your friends, how many of them have experienced a bad thing in a sexual context?
I don't have an exact statistic, but I know catcalling, every single one of my female friends have definitely experienced catcalling. I know mm-hmm. I've been stalked around stores and followed out to my car, and it's scary. And I feel like having someone on the Supreme Court who has done something like that is not a good representation of where we want our country to go.
And you feel strongly enough that you're engaging at the level you're engaging at right now.
Yes, and a number of other issues too, but that is also a prominent one.
Okay, we're talking about this question of will young people turn out at the polls this November or not? Eager to get listeners involved, 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Let's go to Sue from Brookside. Sue, you're on the air.
Okay. Thank you, Steve, for taking my call, and thank you to the young woman in Lawrence who's getting people registered. I'm with the League of Women Voters. We've been doing a lot of voter registration among young people, and they are fired up about the election. They know that the issues are important. The Kansas people who, you know, I've talked to who are already registered, or I encourage them to vote, say, oh, yes, we're going to vote. We know it's very important. So I think we have a lot of potential to get the young people out there to vote. And thank you for doing this.
Well, Sue,
today.
What are you hearing from them? What are they saying to you about why they're engaged?
Oh, yes, because some of the issues and, you know, the Kavanaugh nomination has upset some people and they just want to get out. They want their voice heard. They realize now maybe it is important to get out there and vote and their voice to be heard. And they want to get educated. We give them information, you know, about knowing what's going to be on your ballot, which
okay.
is important.
Sounds good.
The league is all over this. I'm very impressed with the work they're doing for young registration in Eudora High School. I think they had 100 people registered. You can register before you can vote. Mm-hmm. So some people won't be able to actually vote. But to get 100 people out of the upper class of Eudora is amazing. And kids just that for a group, and I mean people under 30, because those are kids to me. I'm 40.
Right.
But for this group to feel disenfranchised or feel powerless in general in the world, this is a day where they don't get to have that luxury anymore. Mm-hmm. They don't get to say, we don't count, so we're not going to try. It is when you see the current candidate for governor winning his primary by 300 votes, that's fewer people than are in the senior class at Lawrence High School.
Mm-hmm.
That is a critical number that young people are hearing and need to hear.
Let's go back to some calls here. And Amy from Overland Park. Amy, good morning.
Good morning. I want to say thank you for this session, and thank you especially to your guests. Our future lies in the young voters. And I want to double encourage the young voters to vote by mail. I work on the Sharice Davids campaign just as a door-to-door canvasser. And Democrats especially, I'm a lifelong Democrat, the Democrats especially are more likely to vote by mail. To actually vote versus if they wait till election day.
Why is that, do you think, Amy?
I think that at least with young voters, that they have the best intentions. They're very excited then, but they don't plan ahead. And this is also true for adults. And something comes around and then they end up not voting. They just don't have time. Something comes up.
That's why I advance vote, exactly the reason I do.
Me too.
Yeah.
So especially where we've got these great races in the 3rd and 2nd congressional district and for governor's office.
Right.
Go get the advance ballot.
Okay. I appreciate the phone call, Amy. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
I just wonder if younger folks, Sammy, have any sense of potentially just how much clout they have collectively here. I mean, there's, you know, you hear political scientists talk about this, that if the, you know, the 18 to 30 year olds get out in any kind of sizable numbers here, they can really begin to change some outcomes here across the country.
Well, yeah. And I think a lot of people are tired of people saying young people don't vote, young people aren't doing anything, they're not involved or engaged, when I don't think that's true at all. And I think they're tired of the current situation and everyone wants to make a difference.
Yeah, okay.
Definitely one of the things I've worked with a lot of the young women I see on is the idea of being taken seriously, the critical mm-hmm. value of being taken seriously. The core element of feminism mm-hmm. is to be taken seriously. And I think against that backdrop, that's part of what's going to drive young people to vote.
Okay, let's go to Diana from Kansas City, Kansas. She's not so confident that young folks will, in fact, turn out. Tell us why, Diana.
Well, actually, this is Imani. The statement that I wanted to make is that I think it's much more important that you hold your elected officials accountable, whether you vote or not vote, because if you pay taxes, essentially taxation without representation. For the young lady there, I just want to know to what extent will she be holding the elected politicians accountable after they're in office.
Boy, you asked the right person.
You know, I have been actively holding my elected officials accountable. I have gone to the Capitol to speak out against different things. I call my elected officials regularly. I also have written to them, and I have friends who also do the same thing.
Are they listening to you?
The summer going into my sophomore year, I worked with Citizens Climate Lobby, and we went to go talk to Lynn Jenkins about joining the Climate Solutions Caucus. And then I sent her a little reminder, and this past summer she joined.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And may I propose that sometimes the act of not being listened to is as powerful as being listened to. I think we're seeing that right now in Washington. A whole lot of people don't feel they were listened to, and that might be very important. So the speaking out is what's important.
Yeah. Our phone number here again, 816-235-2888. You can tweet us at KCUR up to date. You know, Stanley, I'm wondering, you've been involved with the League of Women Voters. I understand you registered well over 200 students at Lawrence High School, Free State, and Eudora High School. That's amazing to me. And you're not even 18. Can you even vote in this election?
No.
You can't even vote?
No.
But you're still engaged.
Yeah.
That's remarkable
and
to me.
Actually, I wasn't a part of the registration of those 200 students, but the league is amazing, and they have been really helpful in getting the LHS Young Democrats set up for our voter registration campaign that's actually kickstarting today.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay. 816-235-2888 is our phone number, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. You know, young people who are into this are hearing you today, and Wes are saying amen. What do you want to say to those who are still skeptical or low interest as we sit here today, less than a month before the general election?
Yeah, what I want them to hear is that I don't want to say it's now or never, because they have a whole lifetime of voting ahead of them. But now is the time to get engaged in that and to be interested, because if you want to make a difference, this time it's going to matter for a long time in Kansas. You know, to say, well, my vote doesn't count has been true. And now on both sides of state line, those votes are down to a very small number. And numbers don't lie. Mm-hmm. If you have 300 votes difference in an election, those numbers don't lie.
You know, Sammy, we're talking about the Kavanaugh impact and what his nomination has meant. What are some other issues that seem to catch the attention of young people? I mean, the proposition we just talked about in our first half today was on the minimum wage. That's on the Missouri side. Mm-hmm. That might be of interest for young people living over here. But what other issues are catching their attention?
Well, definitely the minimum wage, but also the price of education, post-secondary education.
Higher education. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, higher education.
Loan debt,
affordable health care,
mm-hmm.
Definitely like issues dealing with equality. Those are massive for my generation.
So there's lots of issues out
there.
Oh,
and there's many more too. But
the gun issues are still, you know, we did the
gun
discussion
issues.
Specifically for high schoolers.
Yeah. Guns are allowed at the University of Kansas now, mm-hmm. and that makes some people uncomfortable.
Oh, yes, and also my school's campus, they're working to fix this with the new construction of Lawrence High School, but it still is an unsafe campus, and many students have voiced their concerns to me, and people don't feel comfortable even going to assembly sometimes.
Reproductive rights are also, you know, young people have never imagined a time when they wouldn't have the option of having an abortion and or having access to contraception. It seems like I would never utter the sentence, have access to contraception, like it would be controversial, and yet there are concerns about that.
Will young people turn out and vote in November? That's what we're visiting about here this morning. 816-235-2888. Ashley from Topeka, good morning.
Good morning. I was actually Sammy's middle school teacher when she was in the eighth grade.
Well, you did good.
Calling. Yeah. I am so, so proud of that young woman.
Well, you should be.
I'm just calling. Yeah, absolutely. I'm just calling to reiterate that I think that there's no such thing as kids being too young to be urged to be civically engaged. And I think that middle school in particular is a time in adolescence when kids are really searching for kind of their identity within the world. And I found a great amount of fire in my kids at that age group And I think that if we can give them some successes as citizens, that is a prime way to keep them civically engaged for a lifetime. So I'm a mom of a four-year-old, and I take my daughter to politically engaging events,
right,
and things like that. And so I just am inspired by Sammy and her peers, and hope that she continues to do all this awesome work. So.
Ashley, I'm sure, it's really nice of you to call. Sure appreciate it, Chad.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you.
Let's go to David from Kansas City, Missouri. David, you're on Up to Date. We're talking about young people and will they vote. Good morning.
Well, the last election, I'm a judge, and we had a lot of new young voters show up. But I was talking also to my daughter and her husband, and they were living in Denver. And I got on them one day. I says, you know, you guys showed up to vote, and you passed legalized pot in Colorado. And I said, you know, if you guys show up every time, you could change the state. You know, has this not been an example to you? But as I say, the last election, we had a lot of young people show up. Every time we have a new young person show up, we also make a big deal about it. So hopefully they'll come back. But that's my saying. You know, in Colorado, the young kids showed up and they passed pot. Well, they don't, you know, that's the thing. If you can get them out and get them interested to vote, that'd be it.
I think
they could. Young kids can change it. They can really do it. And plus, they're the ones who are going to inherit all this, too.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, David. You bet.
I think that that makes a couple of good points, the caller does. One is that young people do need to get to thinking about more than one issue. If they're interested in guns or they're interested in pot or whatever, they've got to learn enough to broaden their understandings of what all of this means. And teachers want to teach that. Apparently, Sammy's eighth grade teacher did a great job with that.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we need more of that so that students kind of understand how these issues all come together and make sense.
Leslie tweeted this, students here, they have to turn up and turn out, but there's still a lot of apathy out there. Mm-hmm. I engage them to register. She hears a lot of, my vote doesn't matter and I don't know enough. If they give you half a second to show where to get information and register online, that's enough to maybe get them to actually turn out. But you hear people say, I don't know enough about the issues and don't know what to say about all this stuff?
Yeah, no, there's definitely people who I talk to on a regular basis who have said my vote doesn't matter and who don't know enough about things, but then I refer them to studies and other mm-hmm. stuff. And also, if your vote matters most, especially in local elections, so if it was to matter most, it would be this election right now. You
right.
can make a massive difference just with one vote. We saw how close the primaries were with in the Republican primaries.
Collier and Kobach,
yeah.
We got to wrap this up. Sammy Turner of Lawrence High School, thanks so much for coming in. Dr. Wes Crenshaw, a Lawrence psychologist and author, works with teens and families. Always appreciate it, Wes. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Tomorrow on the show, he's had a ringside seat to the drama of national politics. We'll have a conversation with CBS News' chief White House correspondent. That's Major Garrett. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Kathleen Pointer, and Emily Reed. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.